Hundreds of thousands of workers make up an invisible workforce in Los Angeles. Largely undocumented and non-English speaking, they go to work in sweatshops, households, on job sites and street corners every day. Invisible because they fall off the normal labor radar. They forego minimum wages, lunch breaks, health care, normal working hours, and security in order to pay for basic necessities for their families. This is Radio IMC and the Community Voices Project. Today's program, The Invisible Workforce. Part 1, The LA Garment Workers. There are over 150,000 workers in LA's garment district, one of the largest in the nation. The factories are all non-union and owned by contractors hired by the major manufacturers and retailers to produce goods. A largely unregulated industry, they are a major employer for the invisible workforce. Competition for work is fierce, and abuse of the workers is rampant. Kimmy Lee, Director of the Garment Workers Center.
The Garment Workers Center is a new nonprofit independent organization that was just started this year, January of 2001. And we came about as a result of a collaborative effort of a number of immigrant rights groups in Los Angeles. And basically, you know, a number of the groups had been doing some garment work, but no one was really concentrating on it. And the garment industry in Los Angeles is the largest in the country. And so everyone always thought, you know, there should be someone to focus on it, all these workers not being helped, and, you know, this industry is terrible. And so in 1995, when the Thai Almonte workers were found, that's when 72 Thai garment workers were found locked in a shop for 7 years. I mean, it was terrible conditions. That really put it out to the public that, yes, sweatshops do exist in LA. That helped really garner public support for the creation of a center and helped kind of push us off in terms of getting funding and really, you know, getting more community support for the idea of a center. So that was one of the things that really pushed it forward in 95. And then over the last few years, we've had meetings with the workers from the Almonte case, as well as workers that had come out before and kind of came out with this idea of, okay, here's a center, this is what it would do, this is the programs it would have. And so finally in 2000, they got funding, and I was hired last year, and then we opened the center 2001. Workers come here and tell us, like, situations and tell us the stories of what they see every day. Predominantly, they're underpaid. They're not given minimum wage. They're paid anywhere from $1.50 an hour to, some people have come, you know, $8 an hour, but it's just a wide range. Most of them have not been paid, so that's why they come here. They've either been fired or the paychecks bounced, or really, actually, they don't even get paychecks. They get paid in cash or IOU slips. And so a lot of times those IOU slips aren't good for anything, and so then they end up not being paid. Factories shut down often, again, without paying the workers, without any type of accountability.
La primera semana fueron $60 de 7 de la mañana a 6 de la tarde, pero en ese tiempo no tenía experiencia. No tenía experiencia, pero ahora con más experiencia, pero las mismas condiciones son iguales.
The first week I made $60. I worked from 7 in the morning to 7 in the afternoon. But that was when I didn't have experience. Now I have more experience, but the same conditions.
Como por ejemplo, yo trabajé toda la semana, nomás no saqué ni el mínimo, saqué menos del mínimo, pues trabajé toda la semana.
For example, I worked the whole week and I made less than the minimum, but I worked the whole week.
In terms of getting overtime, very, very few workers actually get paid overtime. Again, with the minimum wage, very few actually get minimum wage. Most of them work more than a 40-hour week. They work on the weekends. They're at the will of the owners, where if the owners say, you know, take work home with you or come here on a weekend, they have to do it.
Porque yo desde que uno entra al trabajo, está uno todo el tiempo trabajando. Y como le digo que llevaba trabajo a mi casa en la noche, no tenía tiempo ni de ir con un vecino ni de nada, solamente trabajar y trabajar y trabajar.
Since I started working, I've always been working. I used to take work to my house at night. I never had time to visit the neighbors.
Yo me llené de polvo toda y le digo, ella, ¿para qué? Si no me pagó. Lo que yo saqué, lo único que me pagó, no me da ella que diga, si quiero unos $10 por este rato, limpiaste, te voy a dar nada, nada.
I was covered in dust. For what? She only pays me for the work I do in the factory. She could at least give me $10 and say thank you for this extra work.
But when the workers describe the factories, that's is a typical sweatshop condition where, you know, there's no ventilation, there's garbage, and there's, you know, particles in the air, there's wires exposed, there's chemicals out there floating around, dirty bathrooms, rats, cockroaches, like the whole bit. I mean, any typical kind of idea you would have of a sweatshop exists. You know, the exits are blocked, there's dangerous, you know, conditions around, the workers are sitting at machines that aren't protected, but, you know, bad lighting, and just all kinds of stuff. And so the workers talk about that all the time.
En ese trabajo, a veces los mismos patrones no entienden nuestro idioma. Entonces, son muy pésimas las condiciones en todos los aspectos, en el trabajo, en los servicios de limpieza, en las fábricas, están muy malas. Están muy malas y nosotros queremos que se mejoren todas las condiciones. O sea, mejores baños, mejor limpieza, y mejor trato para todos los trabajadores de la costura. A muchos compañeros ya saliendo muy tarde de sus trabajos, a veces salen pandillas, a veces les quitan el dinero, a veces algunos son golpeados, pero o sea, no tenemos ninguna seguridad. O sea, y fuera de nuestro trabajo también, las compañías o las fábricas para las cuales trabajamos nosotros no tenemos ninguna seguridad médica. Para nada, no tenemos ningún seguro médico.
In this kind of job, our bosses don't even understand our language. The conditions are really bad in all aspects of our work. The cleanliness of the workspace, they're all bad. We want all the conditions to get better. Better work, better bathrooms, and better treatment for the workers. Sometimes our companions come out of work late at night and they get robbed for their money. Some are even beaten up. We have no security whatsoever. The companies that we work for don't offer any health insurance.
None of them have health care. None of them have any type of benefits or vacation. Few of them even get lunch breaks or breaks at all. So it list goes on and on and on. But basically any stereotypes you might have of a sweatshop really do exist.
Despite laws protecting these workers, enforcement rates are low, making rates of abuse very high.
Actually, the U.S. has the best labor laws possible. I mean, California has really good labor laws in terms of minimum wage, health and safety, you know, all kinds of things. But if they're not enforced, then it doesn't matter what the laws are. So the problem is enforcement. And the fact that there's over 5,000 factories in the Los Angeles area alone and only 4 investigators for the Department of Labor. So it's a difficult situation where, you know, yeah, they do checks and raids on some factories, but it's so few that the rest of them just keep going as they, you know, as they want, and it's because nobody regulates them.
Marissa Nuncio of Sweatshop Watch explains California law.
In California, there's it's called AB 633. It's a sweatshop reform bill that was passed in 1999 and went into effect January of 2000, so it's relatively new legislation. And it's actually really strong legislation for garment workers. What it does is it holds not only the factory owners or the contractors responsible for minimum wage and overtime violations, it holds those higher up in sort of the hierarchy, the manufacturers and some retailers responsible. So it's really good, strong law that went into effect and was considered a really big victory for garment workers. The problem right now is that it's just not being implemented well. Sweatshop Watch is doing a lot of work pressuring both the state, the governor, Governor Davis, and the state labor commissioner who is responsible for implementing labor laws and enforcing labor laws. So we do a lot of both public pressure and also just advocacy work with the labor commissioner and the governor's office to just push them to implement the bill as it was written to uphold basically the statutes. What's happening right now is a lot of the, you know, very clear and plain language of the law is just being completely ignored, or there's not enough resources to carry out what the law says. Mm-hmm. So we're pushing for more resources and just for plain better implementations. If you talk to the labor commissioner and staff at the labor commissioner, you know, basically what the law did is it, you know, it held extra people responsible, and it also gave like an expedited process. When you talk to the labor commissioner, they say, well, factory owners aren't complying with us when we go to investigate them. They don't hand over records in time, so we can't do our job in time. We can't find those who they work with to hold them responsible. So that's one of the biggest things. And I think responsibility is sort of, you know, sort of spread out. But also, you know, if you talk to the labor commissioner, they really, you know, will say they just, there's, you know, so many factories in Los Angeles, they just can't get out to them. They can't do the investigations the way they need to. You know, there's about 5,000 factories in LA, and there's just a handful of investigators in the labor commissioner's office in Southern California, so they are overwhelmed.
Workers have in the past experienced where they thought they were government people coming to talk to them, to ask them questions, and the workers have said, yes, all this is wrong, and it turned out to be people that the owners had hired to pose as government people or inspectors. So the workers ended up saying all these problems, and then they got fired. The other thing that happens is blacklisting, where if a worker stands up at one factory, the owners will tell each other so that they won't hire that worker. So there's like, you know, mini blacklisting happening from some of the factories. And we know workers that have gone to 8 or 9 different factories and just been turned down, even though, you know, they're good workers, but it slowly got out that they had stood up for their rights. So that's a huge issue. And so for people who've got families and need to pay rent and need to eat, I mean, it's really difficult for them. So actually, all the workers that come to us have already been fired. Like, we don't have many workers that will stand up while they're still employed by the person abusing them. You know, it's after they've been fired or they just can't take it anymore, then they'll like say, okay, I'm going to file a wage claim. But no one is going to file one while they're still working.
The Garment Workers Center operates as an intermediary between government organizations and the workers.
If they go to the Department of Labor, the main recourse there is wages. So if you haven't been paid, you can file a wage claim. And there's actually two levels. The Department of Labor is a federal office, and then the state office is the Department of Labor Standards Enforcement. So there's two routes you can go, one or the other. And both of those would help you get your back wages. But their process could take anywhere from 6 months to a year. And then you've got to go through their process. So most workers are intimidated because they don't speak the language. Yes, there are people that can translate, but obviously going to a government office is not ideal for someone who's not documented and if you don't know the language. So we help workers do that. Like, we act as an intermediary where the workers can come here and then we'll file a wage claim for them and like walk them through the stages. But if a worker were to go straight there, that's what would happen to them. They'd fill out a form and then the government would handle it through an administrative process. If they come here, what we do is we explain to them what their rights are. We get them to go to a workshop. They meet other workers and we talk to them about the whole industry, like how they are a piece of this whole thing and, you know, what's wrong with the whole thing. And then we help them individually. If they need back wages or if they've been abused or whatever it is, we'll help like figure out how to do their case. But then we try to plug them into the larger movement and say, look, you know, it's not just you, it's 100,000 other workers facing the same thing. Join us, you know, teach other workers about their rights, become part of a larger movement. So we like to, you know, we work with the government. We're not saying don't go there, but we're saying, you know, come here too and we can help, and it's all connected.
The center is also targeting specific retailers and manufacturers, in some cases like Forever 21, filing lawsuits on behalf of the workers to recover back pay and mandate better working conditions.
This first campaign that we've actually tackled right now, or taken on right now, is against Forever 21, which is a young woman's clothing line or store. The company has 90 stores in the country, and they're mostly in malls, and it's kind of teenage young women wear. And the whole issue is that because they target young women, it's a very high volume where, you know, they change their fashions every week and it's a very quick turnaround time and very popular, very cheap. Like, it's very affordable. And so for them to have production, they have to do it locally because they want turnaround really quickly. Whenever you send something out of the country across the border, it takes a few months to come back, right? So the thing is, they want things really quickly, so they keep things here locally so that they can ship things. So they have almost 95% of their production is in LA. So it's a very good target because it's a local person. You know, the factories are here, the workers are here, and so it's an ideal situation to try and you know, attack this kind of problem in this industry. But what we have is 19 workers have come forward to us from 6 different factories. They didn't know each other, but 6 different factories have shown that, you know, they're sewing this label and that there's problems. So we've decided to take this on as a campaign, and we're asking students and you know, the community to go into the store and tell them that we'd like them to pay their workers. Well, right now, we've started weekly pickets and weekly actions with the workers, and it staggers, but it's usually Saturdays or Sundays or like some weekday evening. But we go to the stores, we flyer the stores, we tell consumers like what's going on. We've been educating the employees of the store because they don't really know, and the owner just keeps telling them that, you know, we're making it up, it's not true. Just doing more public education on it for people to really understand that, yes, these clothes are made in the U.S., but the conditions, you know, these exploited workers, they need to be paid. This company is going to make $400 million this year, and they owe the workers over $500,000. So, you know, we think it's that they should pay their workers. They just say that they've paid, or that they don't know who these workers are, that the contractors that these workers worked for aren't part of their formal list, so there's no record of them doing business with those contractors. So they're saying it's not their, like, it's either counterfeit or there's just no proof to tie these workers to them. But the problem is that's how the industry is set up, that there's so many subcontracting things going on that people don't have records of who's doing business with who. And so they're a big company that, you know, gave jobs out to different people who gave jobs out to different people. So we say it's the company's responsibility to know exactly who is sewing their label. And if a worker has a label and can say, yes, I sew those clothing, then they ultimately need to be responsible.
The center provides other services to the workers as well.
I mean, we've been open only 9 months now, but we've had over 300 workers come through the center for workshops and for meetings, and we've been doing different sessions with them, leadership skills, media skills, how to talk to the media. We've also started to talk to them about other industries and how, you know, all the low-wage industries, all the workers are exploited. And they've been meeting with restaurant workers and day laborers and domestic workers. And so I think that's been a great thing to happen because these are all the invisible workforce. You know, like, people hear about the janitors, they hear about hotel workers, restaurant workers, and the unions, but they never hear about this whole invisible workforce that's in LA. You know, the immigrants that don't speak English, that are given $2 an hour, but that's what LA is based on. And so you have hundreds of thousands of workers that are in that situation, but no one's giving them any attention. So I think the fact that we've been able to, you know, provide them with that space, and we've been getting out there more in the public, that people are more aware of the issues.
Pero yo estoy viendo todo y le digo a mi compañero, eso no está bien, no te dejes. No importa que no tengas papeles, defiéndete. Tú con tu trabajo, demuestra que estás trabajando y no tienes que humillarte al patrón.
But now I see everything, and I say to others, it doesn't matter that you don't have papers. You prove yourself to them with your work. You don't have to humiliate yourself to the boss.
Nos ha servido mucho porque nosotros antes no sabíamos que existían estos centros, pero ahora nos han apoyado mucho para algunas compañías, algunas fábricas han mejorado las condiciones para algunos compañeros por medio de esta ayuda que nos dan en el centro. Sí, nos ha servido muchísimo.
¿Y cómo usted supo de este?
Nos dimos cuenta por la televisión. Por la televisión salió el anuncio en la pantalla y todos corremos a escribirlo porque sí, necesitamos una ayuda. Al principio tuve temor por las razones, porque como indocumentados en este país, pues tenemos miedo a cualquier cosa. Tardamos en llegar al centro porque no sabemos la forma de cómo nos iban a recibir, las clases de investigaciones.
It has helped us a lot. We didn't know these kinds of centers existed before, but today they've helped us a lot. Some companies and factories have bettered the conditions for some of our companions because of the support the center has given us. It has helped a lot. We saw an announcement on TV, and I hurried to write down the number because we needed help. In the beginning, I was worried because as an undocumented person, I was scared of everything. We didn't know how they would receive us, what kind of investigation they would do. The Garment Workers Center admits the industry is very difficult to monitor. And for the consumer attempting to make conscious choices, there are no cut-and-dried answers.
Well, I mean, what we tell people is, you know, nothing is clean, right? I mean, nothing is perfect, but that you should try and buy things made in the U.S. to support the jobs here and the local people here. So looking for the actual clothing that are made in the U.S., or just respecting boycotts. If there's an official boycott on a label or on a brand name, whatever, that you just respect that. I mean, it's impossible to know every single one, but if you go to the websites and just keep updated, you know, pretty much the same bad people are the same bad people, like the Gap, Nike, like the really large labels are always the ones that are doing something wrong. And they, you know, they haven't agreed to change. Well, the Gap, Banana Republic, and Old Navy are all connected. That's probably the biggest one that people are very concerned with. Donna Karen, New York. She actually has shops in New York, but we've heard from those workers there that they're only making $4 an hour. They're not given breaks. They can't go to the bathroom. I mean, and even though they're local shops in New York, and she has, you know, said she protects her workers, there's a campaign against Donna Karen New York. The other company that's really bad is Disney. And Disney, just because they have so much in terms of toys and clothing and everything else, like, they've got their hands in so many bad factories across in the world that they're another large brand.
Although these companies are responsible under the law, without resources directed toward enforcement, the laws are virtually meaningless.
The ones that are really benefiting from the lack of enforcement are the retailers and the manufacturers. The law holds them responsible, but there's a lot of loopholes in it right now. Or basically, because after passage of the law, there were no clear regulations on how to implement the law. So they kind of get off scot-free because there's no clear regulations on how they're responsible under the law. So far, for example, the labor commissioners reported that not one single retailer has paid one single cent since this law went into effect. So obviously they're benefiting, or it's no different than it was before. They weren't responsible before. They're still not being held responsible. And, you know, obviously the ones that are still hurting are the garment workers who, you know, need other people to go to, you know, to get their unpaid wages back. Retailers have the pocketbooks, and they definitely have been pressuring really hard since the passage of AB 633 to get regulations and get that basically create loopholes for them and basically, you know, push for that. They've been pushing Davis, for example, the Gap has been pushing Davis really hard since then to say, you know, we don't like this law, you know, and it's working. We went about a year and a half without regulations. It's almost impossible to implement a law without regulations. And it's because there's just been this debate really held up.
The solutions are not simple. But the Garment Workers Center sees its efforts to educate and empower the workers as a strong starting point.
As we build more of a base of workers, we'll be able to have more strength in trying to change the system from the top. And it's kind of a two-pronged approach where, you know, we're organizing the base, but then we're also trying to change policies at the top, like through Sweatshop Watch. And so kind of going at it from both ends, hopefully we'll be able to make a dent. But, you know, so far we have been very visible, and there have been retailers that have responded to us very quickly that have been wanting to work with us. A lot more people are conscious of sweatshops now, so it's definitely an issue where companies are trying to address it before. You know, and that's where a lot of the lip service comes, where, you know, Levi's, the Gap, you know, all the big companies have little statements about how, you know, they don't use sweatshops and how they're monitoring their clothing production. So I think, you know, it's on the top of people's heads about this, and consumers are more concerned about it. So I think, you know, as we keep pushing it and showing that, no, you know, sweatshops still exist, workers are still exploited, more and more companies will be responding. And actually, you know, then we can hold them accountable and say, look, you know, Gap, you said 5 years ago that you cleaned up your act, but look, you know, this is what's going on. And so I think that the companies are becoming more responsive to consumers.
The garment industry is not going away, nor are most of the abuses. But with the help of organizations like the Garment Workers Center and Sweatshop Watch, and increased public awareness, perhaps at least in LA, this element of the invisible workforce will step into view. For more information on bills and boycotts, please visit their website at www.sweatshopwatch.org.
Yo tengo que seguir trabajando y esa es mi vida, así ha sido toda mi vida desde que llegué aquí a trabajar y pues tengo que seguir, ¿eh?
I have to continue working. That is my life. That's the way it's been since I arrived here. I have to continue on. The Community Voices Project is brought to you by the Los Angeles Independent Media Center in conjunction with KILL Radio. You can find this program and other news and information on our website at www.la.indymedia.org. Today's program was produced by Casey Calloway and Adrian Hernandez, with technical assistance from Ian Cohen. The music for today's show was courtesy of Los Jornaleros del Norte, the Day Laborers of the North. For a copy of their CD or more information on the LA-based band, please contact Pablo Alvarado at Chirla. The number is 213-353-1336.